Jackson to the end zone. Touchdown, Texas Tech.
Ezukama for the touchdown.
Hand off to Marcus Fields. Down the sideline. Touchdown, Red Raiders.
Welcome one, welcome all to the Air Raid Podcast presented by Vivi the Matadors. You are on once again with your boy, I'll be sure. And no Dylan today, which I don't blame him. I really didn't even want to really do this podcast. We do have Jeremy Gillen in the house. Jeremy, how are you feeling about this podcast after that game?
About the game? I was going to say down but not out, Albie. We don't need Dylan to make this thing go, except for editing and publishing and everything else that comes about it. But we got this, man. Two-legged.
Nothing like Dylan bashing to get the podcast started.
Yeah. I gotta feel some kind of victory after this weekend. Gotta feel some kind of hype.
I mean, how important is like producing and directing and getting everybody ready for the podcast and basically leading the podcast and uploading the podcast and doing all that is that anyway? Like, that's not that important.
I hear that you can learn all that stuff on YouTube these days anyways. So,
you know,
come on.
Kids do it.
Don't waste your money.
The TikTokers do it.
Yeah, TikTokers.
Yeah.
They make tons.
So, speaking of the kids and the TikToker generation, the TikTok generation's full in the Texas Tech team, and that same Texas Tech team lost in overtime to the 8th-ranked Texas Longhorns over the weekend. And if that's all I would have told you, you'd probably think, oh, that's not too bad, not too shabby. But let me tell you how this team lost on Saturday. Up 15 with 3 minutes and 13 seconds to go, Alan Bowman puts the horns down. Texas Longhorns score quickly. They do an onside that goes through Zach McPherson's hands because some reason he's on the hands team. And they get the ball back. They score again. They go for two. They easily get it. They go into overtime. They easily score again. And Tech does not score to back at the end. And that's how you blow a 15-point lead with 3 minutes to go in the game. Jeremy, your initial thoughts.
There are so many points in this game where you can go, if that didn't happen or if this did happen, this game would be totally different. The only two ones that would stand out to me as critical to making that 3-point thing happen, the 3-point, 15-point, 3-minute comeback happen, is the fubbed onside kick recovery, which I didn't realize it was McPherson. I actually thought it was our guy from Duke. For a second, it was just happened so fast.
Oh, Morgan Stern,
and I was like, "Okay, Morgan Stern, you've been making me okay, happy with you, and you ruined it here." But I'm glad to hear it was McPherson, so that Morgan Stern has continued to make me eat dirt since that first podcast. So that, which feels like that's really out of your control with the way it bounced. Of course, you could have let it go, and then get second, you know, the second layer of people gets it, but that's a hard bounce to get. Here's an unconventional thought. So Roderick Thompson breaking off for that touchdown, that like 60, 70-yard touchdown that he had, was kind of a bad touchdown. Because at that point of the game.
In hindsight.
Definitely in hindsight. Well, and at the beginning of that, I was with my guy Dusty, and at the beginning of that drive, it was like, hey, we need two first downs to seal this thing. You run at the clock. Two first downs, you win. And then he breaks off the touchdown. I was like, forget that, man. We're gonna run it down their throats. But in hindsight, yeah, I think the fact that we broke it off, it was just problematic and awesome all at the same time. What kind of wraps up this Tech team in this game in general?
Yeah, and so let's get into it. Let's talk about the Tech offense. So I actually tweeted at the time that all Tech needs is two first downs and the game is over. And then he broke off that long run. And again, at the time, that shouldn't have mattered, right? Like, that shouldn't have mattered that he broke off the 10-point. It's a 15-point game. The game is over. The game is over at that point. It's a 15-point game. It shouldn't matter. Yes, in hindsight, it would have been better for him to take a knee at the 20, right? Or at the 30 or something like that. And thus continually run the clock out in hindsight. But, like, again, but it's one thing. So Roderick's, what, 20? You're not expecting a 20-year-old to have that sense of thought to let me, instead of me scoring this incredible touchdown to put us up 15, let me take a knee here. And he shouldn't have to. Like, it shouldn't take that. I think my team is so bad that we're not going to get back on the field until this the latter half of overtime, and it's going to be too little too late. Like, he shouldn't have to think about that. I do want to talk about Sirajic a little because I did think he had a great game on offense. Had his first 100-yard game of the season. I think the receivers were incredible. Eric Izukanma, Keshawn Carter, TJ Vasher. I tweeted this. I think that trio is one of the best trios in all of college football. There's very few teams that could put that up. And I'm falling a little short to say they're the best trio in college football, but they're definitely up there. What else did you think about the offensive side of the ball?
You know, Alan Bowman has yet to take a sack, and I think that's a good mark for our offensive line. I think they played a lot better this game than they played in the Houston Baptist game. Seemed like Bowman had a little bit more time to make a good play, and you saw the result of that with Easy, with Keshawn Carter, with TJ Vasher, like, calling in these tremendous catches. I mean, between the three of them, they got 5 touchdowns. TJ Vasher, only 4 receptions, 2 of them for touchdowns. I mean, like you said, I would like to stack those three guys against most people in the country, if not all of them, because I think we have one of the strongest receiving corps. I was a little disappointed with how we abandoned the run game early on, and didn't really utilize it until towards the end of the game. But that might have been more of a just a Wells thing of like, hey, it's not working, we got to get something else going.
I think they just rode the hot hand, yeah, to be honest. Their receivers are playing really well. So let's talk about the receivers a little bit. So what grade would you give that group of receivers? We talked about the trio. Dalton Rigdon had a couple good catches. Sirajic Thompson had a couple screens. That's about it. Actually, I forgot about one person. Miles Price kind of came out of nowhere. He had a really nice catch and had a really nice reverse run, and he was able to take the defense away. He had another pass, unfortunately, that was called back. But Miles Price also in his first action. I mean, what would you give the receivers as a whole?
Yeah, I loved that pass that Price took. That was gonna probably get us a touchdown there. It got called back, which sucked. But that was an awesome play by him. I give this receiving core a solid A. Like, I think that they had really good hands all game. I think they were aware of where they needed to be. There was actually on TJ Vasher's first touchdown when he cut in. At the moment, I was like, man, you had all of this room on the right side of the field, and you try to make it harder on yourself. But on the replay that I saw on the screen, I did not realize that the safety's hips were opened up to the left where I was trying to get him to go, and he made the smart play cutting in. So I think our receivers just played incredibly well this game, helped us stay in the game when it seemed like all hope had been left. I think they played really good.
Izukanma's touchdown catch in the third quarter, I think that was the third quarter, and TJ Vasher's touchdown catch to get the lead in the fourth quarter were both absolutely incredible. Mm-hmm. Like, both plays, I'm like, they're not catching that. Oh my God, he caught it. Like, absolutely fantastic catches. It was funny, because it was like Keshawn Carter had the first quarter, the first like quarter and a half. Izukanma had like the second and third quarter, then TJ Vasher closed it out. Like, that's kind of how it felt. And if that's how it's going to be for the rest of the year, sign me up for that. I also give them an A. The running game, I'd give it a solid B. I think there was, I think Sirajic had a really decent game. Not too much to complain. I think that big run at the end is what really ballooned his stats. Because you take away that big run, the O-line, you said the O-line actually had a decent game. I don't necessarily agree. I think that Bowman was pressured a little bit, and the O-line did struggle to get Sirajic some running lanes. But I do think the plays that he was able to get some yards, he looked okay. But in that 75-yard run, I mean, showed you just how good he can be. So I give him a solid B.
Yeah, I'd say B minus. Like, it flooded on C, but that could just be because with the lack of play calling for opportunities to open up the run game, and then you take away that 75-yard run, we've only got, you know, like 40 yards between all of them. But I think that there was just a lot of opportunity we left on the table.
So let's talk about the guy, Alan Bowman. Let's talk about him. Very, very volatile play. Not volatile. His play was kind of all over the place, right? Like, one time you're seeing him and you're like, man, what is up with this Bowman guy? And the next play, he throws up a really nice touchdown. To me, his first drive was incredible. His first drive of the game was the best drive, arguably, that we've seen Bowman, period. But after that, even some of the touchdown plays, like that pass to Vasher at the end of the game, wasn't a good pass. Vasher was just incredible. The pass to Izukanma could have been picked off. Izukanma was just incredible. Like, we talk about these receivers and how good they are. Some of these balls by Bowman were just ducks in the air. Like, just absolutely. I'm not even talking about the interception that he had. Just balls that were floated. And then some passes were ducks that were also kind of incredible because they went barely outside the cornerbacks. Outstretched arms. So you're like, did he do that on purpose? Did he? The receiver had to really make an adjustment, so it seemed like it was an accident, but I can't really tell. Bowman, man, he was just all over the place. Really hard to grade him.
Man, isn't that his story? Like right now, it's just like, what are you, dude? Are you this elite, like, precision quarterback who can just, like, have that first drive? I was with you, Abby. I saw that, and I thought, wow, Texas is in for a world of pain with their defensive backs if Bowman's going to cut them up like this. And then the rest of the game, he'd throw something up, and I would have no faith that it would be going to where it needs to go. So let me give you a high and low here before I grade him. I think a high – or let's start with a low. I think a low of this game, and you brought it up, when we were texting that immediately after a big special teams play, shout out to Tom Riddall for like what a big special teams hire as a coach. Right after both of our big special teams plays to get the ball back, Alan Bowman throws an interception. I mean, not once.
Immediately after.
But twice. It was just like.
And not just interceptions. Like. Terrible interception.
I mean,
like,
yeah.
Like, my God, what are you doing? Like, not just like bad
minimal
decision,
effort by a defensive back. Throw. Minimal effort to get that ball. Goodness. And it was deflating. I mean, 16,000, and it was more electric than it was in the Houston Baptist game. It got pretty lit in there after those two special teams plays. Immediately. I mean, immediately gone as soon as the interception. It was more like, oh, damn, well, there we go again. I mean, saw that coming. So that's a massive low.
That's your Lubbock accent?
That's as best I can do.
That your Lubbock.
It's best I can do. I've been too many places now. It's hard for me to figure it out anymore. But so, like, that's the massive low. The high, despite those two interceptions, and then obviously the third one, it doesn't have any credence to this, but despite those two interceptions, despite the bad play on multiple drives, the dude kept battling. I think that Bowman showed a resiliency to continue to fight. I was talking about it before the game. I think this team lacks a culture of fighting in the past decade. And something that we saw from Bowman yesterday is that he would continue to try to make it happen. And I do appreciate that. Although feel like his ball could, like his release could do a little more work. Feel like he could lean into a few more passes to probably get a better release anyways. Outside of the few ducks and the interceptions, I think that Bowman does a really good job battling that probably it sets him up to be like QB1, no doubt, for the rest of the season, barring any injury. You know, it gives you the best chance going forward.
Oh, I don't trust anybody on our backups. Remember, I was McIver Hive, and they were like, nah, he's too immature, he can't really play. I'm like, all right, not McIver Hive anymore. but no, I don't think there's a question of whether he'll – You know, I tweeted, get that guy out of here, because some of his throws are just incredibly bad. But I was being more hyperbolic than anything. Like, Bowman's our starter. I don't think there's any question about that. He's the Texas Tech starting quarterback. But I think he still has work to do. I think sometimes he does. I mean, it's just as simple as the fact that he's a, 19-year-old quarterback. He's just a 19-year-old kid. Still has a lot of work to do. Seems like a 20-year-old quarterback. He still has a lot of work to do. He seems like he's worked on his mechanics. But it might have been to his detriment. Like, it looks like he's not as good of a thrower now as he was his freshman year. And it might have been, remember his freshman year, he was a lot of sidearm action. And,
oh, yeah.
And there might have been overcorrection to that. And even a couple of the throws, it looked like he wanted to do a sidearm throw, but he had to trick himself into trying to do it and just look ugly. There's a lot of stuff there. I got to give Bowman a C. Maybe even a C. I'll give him a C solid plus. C. Like, a passing grade. Yeah. Nah, I'll give him a C. Passing grade. You did okay, I guess. You threw us some touchdowns, but some of those throws, man, I was really just scratching my head on, for sure. So let's switch on over to the other side of the ball then. We kind of lambasted Bowman a little bit and hyped up our receiving core, but let's talk about the defense, shall we? The defense that let Sam Ellinger just kind of do whatever he wanted at the end of the game. Now, I'll say this about the defense. I actually thought the defense, despite giving up 63 points, in the second half, looked really good. Mm. Like, overall, like front D-line, linebackers, secondary, a very complete second half performance from them. And then they were on the field way too much. And at that point, they're just exhausted. They're tired. It's really hard to give them, you know, to really talk crap about them when it's obvious how exhausted they were. A part of me wants to say, well, there's no reason for them to be so far off the receivers when you're within 5 yards, but or with when you're within 10 yards in the red zone. At the same time, one, you're exhausted, and two, you're being coached that way. So it's tough for me to really call out the defense here. But let's start looking at it position by position. Let's start with the D-line. The D-line finally got some sacks, was able to get to Ellinger a little bit, got 2 sacks in the day, got some pressure. Eli Howard had one of the best games I've seen him had in the last 2 years. What do you think about the D-line?
This, again, I'm eating my words here. Talked crap about the three-man front. I thought, man, we need more muscle up there. Boy, these guys were making it happen. I mean, they were crashing the pocket around Ellinger continuously, like culminating in 2 sacks between Howard and Tyree Wilson. First of all, Tyree Wilson's first play of the game, he steps out there. That was awesome. But I think that, like, this three-man front, there may be something to it. And they are switching it, like, and we'll talk a little bit about depth here in a second, but I think that they are making a lot more of an impact than I thought they would this season, especially against, you know, offensive line like Texas.
So what grade you give
them? I'm going to give, it's kind of hard, right? Because at the end of the game, like, it does, like you say, they were on the field a lot, and it really wore them down, which kind of led to, you know, Texas coming back so easily there at the end. For their game, considering all things allowed, like a B+, like a solid B+, hinging on that A, like just creating chaos, pushing their line, doing everything that they can, I think.
All right, I'm not going to go that far. I'm actually going to give them a C+, and I'm going to tell you why. A lot less to do with the deep. Actually, no, I'll give him a B-, and because a lot less to do with the players and how they play. I actually thought, like I said, I thought Eli Howard played really well. I thought Nick McCann played really well. But it has a lot more to do with the three-man front in the first half was doing nothing, absolutely nothing. Like Sam Ellinger was able to do whatever the hell he wanted to do in the first half, and I think the third quarter, they started blitzing. We started seeing Morgenstern off the edge. We started seeing Brandon Boyer-Randall off the edge. We started seeing 4 guys going, 5 guys going. And then in the fourth quarter, when it was just 3 guys, it was still working because now you've already given pressure. You've already, you know, now the O-line's already feeling that pressure. Ellinger's already feeling that pressure. So now because you've been able to blitz more, that 3-man rush all of a sudden was getting a lot more pressure on the quarterback than in the first half, right? So I'm giving them a B-, but it's actually less about them and more about the scheme. Just how the scheme was in the first half was, in my opinion, awful, but in the second half was a lot better. And it was an adjustment, which, you know, I'm not really used to seeing adjustments from Texas Tech.
Right.
But it was nice. It was nice in the second half, and I think the D-line played really well. Linebackers, as always, played phenomenal. Rico Jeffries, that's the Rico Jeffries we were missing from last year. He played fantastically. Brandon Boyer-Randall had a couple mistakes, but also a couple really good plays. And I'm going to give him credit. Credit where credit is due. Jacob Morgenstern played a really good game.
Yeah, man, he did.
I was pleasantly surprised.
Yeah, he was a lot quicker than I thought he'd be. Yeah. But you can't. I mean, you got to talk about your man, Krishan Merriweather, dude built like a brick house that's built around another brick house that's built around Fort Knox. I mean, this dude is massive. We talked about him a lot before the season, but sitting up there next to the sidelines, seeing that dude come onto the field, I literally said, "Holy shit, this dude is a hunter," and he moves. I think he moves like a defensive back. He is so quick. And some of the hits that he laid, I thought, this guy's not getting up for a little bit. And I'm just happy to have, I think our linebacking core is some of the most, like, we have a solid linebacking core. I think it's our best defense. It's our best defensive position.
Not to mention, we went through all those guys. We didn't talk about the making his Tech debut, Colin Schooler, against his brother. Colin Schooler, I thought, had a really decent game. I mean, nothing great. I don't think he was the best linebacker out there. Actually, I think there were a lot of linebackers that played better, but he wasn't bad. He was solid in his debut. Hadn't played football in a year. good for him, really getting out there, really getting some burn out there. So my grade for the linebacking crew, I'm probably looking at a B+. I thought they played pretty well. I thought they kept the run game as contained as you possibly could, outside of like DeKonta Ingram was able to break off a couple times, and then Ellinger. It's really hard to do much against them. I mean, Ellinger. But I thought they played pretty decently, especially in the second half.
Right. I'm right there with you. The B plus range is really good for me for the linebackers doing their job.
All right. So then we get to the secondary. Now I know I was worried. I was worried about the secondary. They give up 3 touchdowns to Josh Moore. I think it was the doomed stretch that we don't want to talk about right now. Mm. Brandon Schooler was kind of targeted all throughout. I'm curious if that was a hey, you're going up against your brother, let's get you the ball or whatnot. But what do you think about the secondary? They weren't awful.
There was a lot of improvement from week one, and we did not play a traditionally air raid offense this week, but I think there was a lot of improvement in how they defended the pass. Saw more pass deflections this game. I saw a lot more awareness of where the ball was. A number of passes off the top of my head where, you've got Adrian Fry lined up with somebody just going, doing a go route. Adrian Fry being able to turn around, get eyes on the ball, jump up, make a tremendous play to smack it down. Where any other season, I'm like, oh, that's a touchdown. Like he's got our defensive back beat. That's an easy touchdown. And we saw a number of those between. Monroe got deflections, Fry got deflection, McPherson got deflection. I think that this team, I think this defensive back core has the IQ, I'm going to say, because of who like Derek Jones is and his scheme ability. I think they're just trying to like work it into their like physical rhythm, being able to like understand how to physically act on what they know is the right way to do it. And we saw a lot more of that this week, which is why Ellinger didn't burn us with a bunch of like big play passes. But then I could also, like we said last week, that, you know, Ellinger is also not a big deep ball kind of guy either. So maybe a little bit in our favor on
the man
ways.
Can't throw.
Yeah.
Look, no. The man can't throw. So, like, Sam Ellinger, sure. You want to pass, you can pass. I think the secondary, I agree with you, the secondary was in a much better position. There wasn't guys stupidly wide open in this game like they were against Houston Baptist. But here's my problem with the secondary. And, I think the secondary played a lot better than we can ask from them. Right, like there's not much better you can play.
Remember who we are, people. Remember who we are.
Yeah, like the third worst secondary in college football last year. I think what gets me frustrated is that when it was time to score points, Texas was able to score points. It wasn't a problem for Sam Ellinger to do a 5-yard slant route for a touchdown. It wasn't a problem to get a guy at the back of the end zone real quick. It was just so easy. For a second, I mean, to me, when Sam Ellinger goes and does his scrambling as a secondary member, why do you care? Like, you have to trust your defense, your D line, and your linebackers. Right. Like we've talked about how much we're blowing up the linebackers, and how good they are. Trust them to do their job. You worry about the receivers, because Sam Ellinger, anytime he breaks the pocket, oh, he knows the receivers are going to be open because the secondary is just not good enough to hold on to him, and so. It was we didn't see a lot of big yardage, but when it was winning time, when it was time to score, when it was, you know, a minute left and they had to score a touchdown to be within two, it was easy money. Mm-hmm. When I got within 10 all 3 times at the end of the game, I knew they were scoring because I knew they were going to do. I even called the overtime touchdown because it was the same setup at the end of the fourth quarter. It was the same setup. Oh, it's a slant right here.
Yeah, yeah.
And again, you could argue that maybe they're being coached that way. Maybe they're being told to back off. But why would you back off when you're on the 3-yard line? Like, that, it just doesn't make any sense.
Right. Well, and then the lack of pressure on Ellinger in the late game, too. Like, no blitz packages anymore. You're just allowing him to play his game. And, you know, he excels in that. So it's problematic all around.
Yep. So I'm giving the secondary a C.
Yeah.
And that's about as good a grade as they're going to get all year. So
yeah. C makes sense. C. Yeah.
Quality C.
What about you? Yeah, no, it's a quality C for me. I think a lot of improvement from week one. If they can just make marginal improvements every week, you know, do what you're supposed to as an athlete, if you want to make it anywhere, then this team can work its way up to a C+ for sure. But we got to have marginal improvement each week. Alex Hogan also, by the way, hey, Alex Hogan, first interception of his career. It looked awesome. So good job, Alex.
It was great. It was great. So you kind of already touched on the special teams. Special teams was a big part in this game. Talk about a block punt for a touchdown, a onside kick that was done to perfection. And then on the other side of that, for some reason, Zach McPherson, our cornerback's on the hands team, and the ball goes straight through his hands. Mm. Not to mention
their block
punt. Yeah, not to mention their block punt, not to mention a missed field goal. So, you know, as much as everybody's talking about how great special teams was, I'm like, eh. There was a lot of bad, too. Like, there was a kind of a good, you know, middle-of-the-road thing here. It kind of all equaled out. Tom Rudol, I think, coached him really well, but I think the execution, especially towards the end of the game, was really lacking on the special team side.
Yeah, no doubt there. I really, really weird game. I mean, how many other, like, when you see a game like this where it's just special teams battle of ridiculousness both ways, like, this is not... Nothing good will come out of this game, just weirdness. And, of course, the 15.3-minute Texas offense sure solidified that. But, yeah, it just did not – it felt awesome in one moment. It felt absolutely demoralizing and ridiculous in the next. I would like for Tom Rudol to find that, you know, happy medium with this team. We don't have to have big special teams plays for touchdowns if that means we don't give up big special teams plays for touchdowns. But I would like some kind of solid effort. Something normal, please.
So before we get to the final thoughts and thoughts about the fact that Texas came back from 15 down with 3 minutes and 13 seconds to go, I do want to say something to you, Jeremy. I don't know if you watched any other football game this past weekend, but the sixth-ranked team in the country, the LSU Tigers, lost on Saturday. Did you hear about that?
Yes, I did hear about that. I heard some musings.
Yeah, so do you know who they lost to?
Mississippi State Bulldogs, my former university.
Mississippi State. Oh, yeah, yeah. Yeah, that's right. That's right. Mississippi State. Do you know who the coach of Mississippi State is?
Some guy from the Northwest. Couldn't tell you who.
Yep. Yeah, yeah. So it's Mike Leach. Mike Leach, former Texas Tech coach. First game in the SEC after being told that his system would not work in the SEC, beats the defending national champions 44-34. And that prompted a response from Red Raider Nation. And actually, so somebody tweeted that why do Tech fans have a weird obsession with Mike Leach, a decade-long obsession with Mike Leach. And that garnered some conversation and the conversation surrounding the Mike Leach curse. So for people that are unfamiliar with the Mike Leach curse, since 2010, when the whole Adam James scenario happened and Mike Leach was fired, and not only was he fired for, in my opinion, an unfireable offense, but he was the money that he was owed on his contract was not paid to him because of a technicality in the state of Texas. And so since then, there's been said there had been a curse on the program. And if you've seen the program in the last 10 years, there's nothing that tells you there's not a curse on this program. 66-6, 66-10, 82-27. The tip pass that missed extra point. This game. Like, there's nothing that tells you that there's not a curse. Jeremy, do you believe in the Mike Leach curse? Oh, Tuberville left the recruit at dinner to go to Cincinnati.
Yeah, bro.
Our former quarterback was the head coach for 6 years, gets fired because he's bad, and then gets a job in the NFL. Like, and his team is winning. Anyways, Jeremy.
I will be totally transparent in saying that I don't believe in curses. I think there's a reality where, you know, sometimes you just because you try doesn't mean you win. And Texas Tech can try for 100 years like Chicago Cubs did, and maybe we still won't win something. And that there's just a reality there. I will say there is some kind of problem. There is a big problem with not, you know, getting off on technicalities for not paying somebody what they're owed. I have a big issue with that, and that's a gripe I'll have until they probably never – I'll have that to my grave because I do not see Texas Tech ever paying Mike Leach that money. But curse-wise, no. The decade has sucked big
big one, but I think that there's no such thing as curses, but at the same time, there's a lot wrong with this, with the belief, like the pedagogy around building this football program. We need something better. Let me hear, Albert, let me hear from you. I think that you do believe in this curse. If I know you're a big curse guy, you carry sage around the house as well to get rid of the bad spirits.
So I don't believe in curses, though as an African, I feel like I probably should. But I don't believe in curses. However, dude, I was thinking about it yesterday and I'm like, I've never truly believed in this curse, but I may need to start to. Like, it's what's been going on with this program in the past decade is unfathomable. Like, it's ridiculous. And that's the only thing that can make sense. We are now going on our third coach, and all three of them have been bad. Like, it's not a, I don't know, I'm not going to go on this whole Fire Wells tirade. I mean, at the end of the day, Jeremy, you're right. He did go toe-to-toe with the eighth-ranked team in the country, yada, 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 whatever. But it's like the things that have happened in this have been absolutely like just ridiculous. Like what has happened to this program, to the team? We have right now the Michael Jordan of football is playing in the NFL, and at Texas Tech, he had a losing record. That is ridiculous. That is crazy. Think of the real Michael Jordan didn't win a national championship in North Carolina, and instead they missed the tournament 2 out of the 3 years he was there. Wouldn't that be crazy? That is what it's like having Pat Mahomes. Like, it's the past decade has just been asinine. And I don't know how else to explain it.
Right. No, it's boggles the mind.
Pay Mike Leach. At this point,
I'm try anything.
Pay him. Try anything. Pay him just to get that off, just in case. Like, how much do we owe him? Like, what, $5 million, $10 million, whatever? Well, what is that? Like, some booster could probably pay that off. Pay him just to get that monkey off of our back so we can say, you know what? We crossed that off the list. That ain't it. Because at this point, it's getting ridiculous. Getting absolutely ridiculous. So, Jeremy, final thoughts. The Texas Tech Red Raiders lose 63-56 after being up 15 with 3 minutes and 13 seconds to go. What do you
have to say? Yeah, so we were right there in it in a game we should have never been right there in it with, and we definitely lost a game we had no business losing. I'm optimistic for the future, even with Kansas State next. I'm optimistic. If they improve on this game, I think that's a step in the right direction. And if we lose more, if not all of the rest of our games by 1 point, I will revoke my Texas Tech degree. I will just lay it on the steps of Skovanek's house. I know where you live, man. And I will say, you know what? I am done. This has done nothing for me. You've only brought me pain. And that'll be it.
That is a really creepy thing to say to the president of the university.
Everybody knows where he lives.
Oh, okay. All
right. It's obvious.
So, I get it. Texas Tech went to overtime with the eighth-ranked team in the country. We should be proud. This team wasn't expected to do it. We weren't expected to. We almost pulled it off. I get that sense of optimism. These guys fought hard. They really wanted to win. They fought hard. They were right there with the Texas Longhorns, the evil Texas Longhorns. So we should feel happy going forward. This team can be better than expected. This team stinks, Bucko. This team sucks. I don't care that we were right there. We're a Big 12 team. We should be right there with the Texas Longhorns. Why would that make me feel better that we were right there toe-to-toe with Texas? We should be right there toe-to-toe with Texas. The fact that you lose, there's no way to feel good about losing a game. You should not only should have won, but you had a 99.8% chance of winning. There's no way to feel good about that. I'm tired of the moral victories. I'm tired of the good job, good efforts. I'm tired of it. This team is just not, they're not, if you can lose a game like this, you're just not a good team, period. I don't care that you outplayed what you were supposed to do. I don't care that we all thought we were going to lose by big. And yes, they played much better than we expected. But that 3 minutes and 13 seconds, I've said it I don't know how many times on this podcast, it's ingrained in my mind now. That for three, they were up 15 with 3 minutes and 13 seconds and lost a football game. That is ridiculous. Absolutely. The coaching, we didn't get coaching grades. Coaching towards the end of the game was abysmal. Absolutely abysmal. On both, like, oh, it was ridiculously bad. Like, I would, if Keith Patterson got fired today, I'd be okay with it. I'd be absolutely okay with it. Ridiculously bad coaching towards the end of the game. People were upset that another questionable call was deciding to go defense after your defense is obviously exhausted in overtime, deciding to put the defense back out there. That's a questionable call, but I'm not necessarily going to question it. I think that's a 50-50 thing. But still, either way, just bad decisions, bad luck, bad play. I'm tired. I'm so tired. And what do I got to expect next week against K-State? What, they're going to all of a sudden learn how to win a game up 15 with 3 minutes and 13 seconds to go? No, I'm expecting the same
thing.
We
will never feel safe again. Ever.
No. Here's the problem. I told you this before. Here's the problem. I knew this team sucked. I knew this team was bad. We talked about it. I thought, oh, this team is, they have a 16.5 point spread. Oh, man, give me Texas with the spread. I was like, they're going to beat the crap out of us. And you know what happened? Tech played well. Played well enough to win.
They do?
Played well enough to be up 15 with 3 minutes and 13 seconds left. I'm over here hooping and hollering in my living room.
And they made you believe.
Tech's actually going to do it. They made me believe, Jeremy. They made me believe that this team is actually going to get a top 10
the
win.
Audacity.
Oh, man. They had the. They couldn't just let me be comfortable with my 30-point loss that I was expecting. They couldn't just let me just be nice and happy. No, because that's not what the Texas Tech football program likes to do to us. They like us to think they could actually win a game and then snatch a loss from the claws of victory.
Mm. It's hard. It hurts, man.
I hate it here, Jeremy. All
right. Gonna start that GoFundMe.
Okay. Steps off the soapbox. That's all I got. Jeremy, as always, where can people find you on the Twitter sphere?
At Jeremy Dane.
Simple as that. As always, make sure to follow us at Air Raid Podcast on Twitter. This will be uploaded on Viva the Matadors. Make sure to go check us out on Megaphone, all that jazz. Follow me at Mr_IllBeSure. This game didn't make me feel any better about the team. Maybe next week against K-State will. Good chance K-State. I don't think the rankings have come out already. But K-State will probably get some votes. I mean, they played, even though they lost to Arkansas State. Yeah, they played pretty well.
Oh, yeah. We'll talk about it on the next one.
Yeah, they played pretty well. So we'll see. Guys, it's rough being a Red Raider. I know it is. But we're all in this together, right? We are all suffering together. So, and on the bright side, Baron Morton comes in 2 seasons.
Ooh, baby,
so
baby. There that. You go.
There's that. So, for Jeremy, this is Albie. You've been listening to the Air Raid Podcast, presented by the Matadors. As always, stay wrecked, people.